Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana, what I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. It's a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report, live and underway here on the Big X Sports Radio. Complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. We do this show each weekday, 11 o'clock, the live show. You can catch the replay most days in the 3 p.m. hour. And, of course, we're available as a podcast as well. I know lots of people listen in that format. We're on Apple Podcasts. Also SoundCloud as well. And no matter how you join us, we hope each day we're glad you're with us here on the Big X Sports Radio. Let's jump into the show today. Today's show lineup, which is a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. In segment one, we'll have our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Romeo Langford with the Boston Celtics last night. That wasn't really a big surprise to see him on the bench, but he played last night. So we'll talk about that. We'll recap the 5-plus minutes or so that Romeo got down in Dallas last night. Also, a look ahead at IU and Notre Dame, the next opponent for this Indiana team coming up in the Crossroads Classic. And the IU football recruiting class is basically official now. 18 players signed with Coach Allen and the IU football program yesterday. We'll take a look at how things unfolded and some of the top prospects for this Indiana football program in this class moving forward. And last night, I got an opportunity for the first time live and in person to see Jeffersonville last night. They absolutely crushed an undermanned Southwestern of Hanover team. But the Red Devils are very good, and I tell you what, if you do not have plans on Friday, and maybe you're an IU fan that's not a big high school basketball follower here in the area, make sure you get out to the Jeffersonville-Silver Creek game. I tell you what, some great matchups individually with players in that game. Lots of Division I talent on the floor, both upperclassmen and underclassmen as well. And there's no reason for that one not to be absolutely packed to the gill at William S. Johnson Arena at Jeffersonville on Saturday night. It should be a good one. It should tell us a lot, really not about sectional or postseason or anything in that regards, but it should tell us a lot maybe who the key program is right now here in Clark and Floyd counties, because both of those teams are off to good starts. Both of those teams we know have great players. And, man, they both have played a tough schedule so far with lots of future tough games coming up. But Friday should be a really fun game, and so we'll talk more about that coming up in the headlines segment as well. Also, later in the program, segment two, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. He joins me for our weekly chat on IU basketball. We try to bring you an IU expert, as we call him, each day here on the show. And so with Alex, when he joins us, we'll take a look at the Notre Dame game on Saturday, the Crossroads Classic event as a whole. We'll talk some other Big Ten and college basketball notes as well, and everything you want to know with IU basketball at this point of the season. Then later in the show, Chris May, he's the executive director of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, a great friend of the game in our state, and he's going to join us to talk about the Hall of Fame Classic this year. Silver Creek obviously participating in the Hall of Fame Classic this year on the boys' side, which will be another challenge for Coach Hoffman and his team to play some very top teams and top players in the state of Indiana. And we'll just talk some high school hoops on a statewide level with Chris, who is very well-versed about what's going on, not just here in Southern Indiana, but across the state as well. Don't forget to stop by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany and mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison to receive $1 off a delicious box lunch made to order for you at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget, you can also submit a comment or a question and may get read on the air during this Thursday show. If you want to submit a question for one of our guests or just a comment about IU basketball or maybe the Jeffersonville Silver Creek game, you can send it to us a couple different ways. Follow me on Twitter at Hoosier Hills. Again, all one word, Hoosier Hills, my username there. You can tweet me. You can leave me a DM there. You can also follow the show on Facebook. We have a page set up. It's the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison is what you search for. You can like it. You can follow for podcasts and updates about the show. And you can also leave us a message or a comment there. And again, it might get read on the air in today's program. Let's jump into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. And how about this? Romeo Langford, I just said yesterday, we're glad he's back. We think he's going to get lots of playing time with the main team in the G League. Don't be surprised if he is at the end of the Boston bench occasionally. I was thinking more for home games and games like that. But he was on the bench last night when the Celtics played on ESPN down in Dallas. And what do you know? He got in the game a little bit in the first quarter, a little bit more in the second quarter. According to the official box score, Romeo logged 5 minutes and 12 seconds of action for the Boston Celtics last night at Dallas. And the only thing in the box score, no turnovers, no points, but he did have one assist in the game last night. Going to be interesting to see because the main G League team, the Red Claws, they play today in Las Vegas. And then they do not play again until December 27th. Boston, they play at home Friday against Detroit. They return home again on Sunday against Charlotte. Where's Romeo going to be? Is he going to do double duty and log lots of minutes with the Red Claws and maybe sit the bench and log a few minutes potentially for the Celtics? Or with him breaking into the lineup last night, getting inserted in the first and the second periods for brief stints, is he now worked his way up the rotation a little bit and going to stick with Boston full time? So just when you think you've got it figured out and you got some understanding of what the plan could be, it ends up not working that way. So it'll be interesting to see what Romeo does and what Boston does with him and if they choose to ship him around a little bit or if they choose to keep him with the Celtics now that he was at least put in. I think he would have been the seventh or eighth man in the game last night, but it just was great to see him out there. Great that he didn't have any turnovers, and I should say this and probably knock on wood here at the studio table, great he didn't have any injuries. That has been something small, minor injuries have kept him, obviously, from any minutes with the Celtics organization in a Celtics uniform so far this season until last night's game. So that in itself, I think, is a positive step forward for Romeo Langford. Obviously, Indiana fans gearing up for the next IU game, part of the Crossroads Classic at Bankers Life Fieldhouse on Saturday afternoon when Indiana takes on the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame 8-3. They've just got one win over a top 100 KenPom team, if you follow those computer rankings, and that would be Toledo. They also have lost their three losses to North Carolina, Maryland, and Boston College as well. And again, the Crossroads Classic, I think it's a fun event. We're going to look at the team records in the event entering Saturday here in just a second. But there have been calls at times for Indiana maybe to get out of this event so they could participate in another big early season classic, another one in New York or somewhere else that maybe puts Indiana against other teams and to help with the NCAA tournament resume. But let's be honest, if you're a fan of Indiana basketball, and I mean the whole state, not just IU, but if you like to follow local players, local high schools, local colleges, it's hard to not like this event. Indiana, Notre Dame, Butler, Purdue. And interestingly enough, the records for the teams in the Crossroads Classic, Indiana and Butler, they share the best records in that event. Indiana 5-3, Butler 5-3 as well. Notre Dame would be next. They would be third. Notre Dame has a 4-4 even record, and Purdue just 2-6 in the Crossroads Classic. So that Crossroads Classic event has not been great for Purdue basketball. But this year, I think Butler, obviously, an intriguing matchup for Purdue on Saturday. And in its own regard, I think Indiana and Notre Dame could be a decent game. It's one Indiana, though, needs to win, as they have a couple left in the month of December before full Big Ten play opens up after the new year. Yesterday was the signing day, National Signing Day, and I mentioned this yesterday. It is just crazy. I was watching, following the coverage of Indiana, obviously, on social media and through Matt Weaver at Pigs.com and others that follow IU football. And I also, you know, was keeping the TV on in the distance, lots of signing day coverage. And it's amazing, first off, that recruiting is where it is as far as the interest that fans have in recruiting. Can you remember the days of the 900, the 1-900 numbers where you could call and get updates on, you know, the top rated players in the country and things like that? Obviously, we're a long way from that. It used to be internet based. Now it's mainstream media. You can turn on ESPN or their family of networks and get lots of coverage throughout the day of some of the big announcements and some of the big decisions. And of course, the other thing about college football that just amazes me, and I guess recruiting as a whole, football, basketball, whatever it may be, it's obviously way more popular than what I think we ever thought it might be. But the thing about football recruiting specifically, and I said this yesterday, is it's amazing to see players flip. And you can almost pick any college, any recap story from any newspaper or website, and you can read about their action yesterday on signing day and who signed and what their position is and what their role for the team could be and their, you know, where they were rated and that sort of thing. But there was a surprise flip or a surprise commitment. So-and-so committed to Indiana but was previously committed to this school. And I don't know that Indiana had any flips yesterday on actual signing day as other schools did, but they had a player pretty late in the process that was committed to Ohio, flipped to Indiana, which I guess that somewhat makes sense, a mid-major school in sports as an opportunity to, as opposed to an opportunity to play at a Big Ten football school. But you see it all the time, even with big schools, where a player is committed elsewhere and ends up on signing day signing the scholarship paper to another school. Indiana yesterday at 18-man class is their class of 2020 recruiting class for Coach Tom Allen. I think the stories and the experts out there that follow football and recruiting much more closely than I do score it a pretty good class for Coach Allen, as you would expect, as the Indiana team had some new success on the field and reaching a bowl game and a new win total that they haven't been able to do for many years. You would expect recruiting success to be at an upward trend and bringing in some better players and maybe even more players. And I, from what I can see, Indiana's recruiting class is headlined by some skill guys, wide receiver Rashawn Williams, who is from Detroit King High School, and running back Tim Baldwin, who at one time was committed to Michigan. They also are joined by quarterback Dexter Williams, who is recognized as a mobile dual-threat quarterback. Those are just some of the bigger names in the class of 18 yesterday for Tom Allen. And we'll be recapping and getting the latest on IU football, not today, but coming up very soon from Matt Weaver of Pigs.com, is, of course, Indiana football on the field, getting ready for a big opportunity, a big bowl game, and the opportunity to take on Tennessee. I mentioned last night I got a chance to run up and see Jeffersonville at Johnson Arena. The Red Devils cruise to an 82-43 win over Southwestern Hanover. Keep in mind, this is a Southwestern team that was missing a couple players last night, but last year they were really good. They made it to the regional. I think at one time, maybe even in the regional, they were rated as the number one team in their respective class, which is Class 2A in Indiana. And this is a team that beat Jeffersonville a year ago and did so fairly handily, which was a disappointing loss, I know, for the Red Devils at the time. But last night, Jeff, they looked awful good. Jeff is loaded with talent, especially in their starting lineup. Trey Coleman looking good out there. Lots of putbacks, lots of dunks on putbacks for Trey Coleman. And Will Lovings-Watts, I feel like every time I see him, every few months maybe, he takes steps forward in his game and becomes a more complete player. And now he's even, you can tell, growing into that long and lanky body that he has. He clearly is going to be a special player, not just this year for Jeffersonville, but lots of fun to watch in future seasons as well. And I'm curious how his recruiting will pick up over the next few months, because he will have some big opportunities to be seen and to have big games as well for this Jeffersonville team. That said, last night, Loving's watched 28 points. Jacob Jones had 14 points. Trey Coleman had 12 points. A sophomore, Kobe Stoudemire, 9 points. Caleb Mason, 9 points. A very balanced Jeffersonville team who improved to 3-2 on the season. And here I am bragging about Jeff. They've lost a couple games, but Lawrence North, one of their losses, goes on to beat Lawrence Central. And not only beat them, they won by 10 points and led a great part of the game by 15 or so points. And obviously Lawrence North, Lawrence Central, along with Bloomington South, I think, thought of as some of the very best teams in our state right now. Then they lost on the home court of Scott County, Kentucky, this past weekend. And if you know anything about basketball in the state of Kentucky, Billy Hicks and Scott County are always at the top of things and always have great players moving through that program. So, yes, the Red Devils have lost a couple times, but they have an unbelievable team with lots of potential and lots of talent to do some damage, I think, later on in the season, especially as the postseason get here. My point of all this is get to the Silver Creek-Jeffersonville game Friday if you don't have plans. It should be just some terrific matchups. Obviously, the game itself is going to be fun. Two teams that are experiencing a great time in their program right now with lots of talent and the excitement on high, and both teams are playing a great schedule, and both teams are recognized in our state right now as some of the better teams. But individually, in that game on Friday night, there are going to be some terrific matchups in that contest. I mean, you think about Trey Kaufman and Cooper Jacoby and even Brandon Northern, the guard, Bryant Northern's son, who played at Jeff. He's been playing so well for Silver Creek. You take those three and others and match up against Jeffersonville and some of their key guys. It should be some great individual matchups each and every possession to watch in that game. But if you don't have plans Friday, that's the game to be at. It's no question about it, the high school game of the week here in our area. And really, and Brian Sullivan of WNAS, who is a New Albany guy and keeps a lot of historical stuff for the New Albany program, all-time leading scorers and records and things like that, he's got a great mind for basketball and the history of our game here in the area. And you really have to look back, I think, to some of those great games in the early to mid-90s when New Albany and Jeff were squaring off year in and year out with unbelievable college talent, to find another high school game with two local teams, at least, where the college-level talent has been that good. So I guess that's my question to Brian. When is maybe the last time that we saw this much college talent in a game? Would it be one of the Jeff New Albany games in the 90s, the early to mid-90s? I would have to think that it would be. But Friday should be a tremendous game. Get out and support high school basketball. This will be one. I don't know exactly how it's going to go. I think both teams are pretty doggone good. It should be a dogfight, I would think. But regardless, you're going to see some great players who are going to go on to play college basketball at a high level. And don't for a minute think that Cooper Jacoby isn't going to get some bigger guys that come watch him, bigger schools that come watch him. When you score 36 points against Blackhawk Christian in front of college coaches of all different levels, I don't know if you need any way to make word spread quicker, but that's a great way to do it. And Cooper, obviously our athlete of the week after that big performance Saturday at Southport. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines. Don't forget, with Zaxby's, the home of famous hand-breaded, hand-seasoned chicken fingers, fresh salads, and saucy wings, all made to order at Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall joins us. We'll talk IU basketball, the upcoming game in the Crossroads Classic against the Fighting Irish. We'll talk Big Ten basketball and more. And also ahead, Chris May of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. We'll talk more about Silver Creek and the Hall of Fame Classic this year and high school basketball as well. All coming your way on a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, presented by CC Power Sports.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Thursday program. Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. He joins us each week as we talk IU basketball and, of course, the Hoosiers getting ready for a big game in the Crossroads Classic against Notre Dame. We'll talk about that coming up here in just a few moments. But, Alex, I wanted to start with this. Romeo Langford last night finally got a few ticks, a little bit in the first period and a little more in the second period. I think it was just over 5 minutes in the game that he logged as far as playing time goes. One assist in the box score as well. But finally, we got to see him out there in a Boston Celtics uniform getting some kind of minutes at least for Brad Stevens' team.
Yeah, it took it seems like Boston had some injuries and some other things going on last night. So I guess it took that to get him in the game. I don't want to go on a rant here about the NBA, but it's been a little, and I don't know if you share the same feelings, Matt. It's been a little confusing for me to kind of watch how this has all unfolded with Romeo this year, because I figured he would have a minimal impact as a rookie. You know, a lot of guys going to a contending team have limited roles as a rookie, and it's uncommon to be a lottery pick and go to a team that's really one of the best in their respective conferences. But it's just been a little confusing to me to try to figure out like why Romeo hasn't even really gotten an opportunity. Even last night's game I watched, and he got in there a little, as you mentioned, but really he was just standing in the corner as they put the ball down a couple times and not really being asked to do anything. It's a little, I don't know how he's reacting to it. I'd be interested to hear maybe when this season's over and when he gets deeper into his career, kind of how he navigated this. But for a guy who, you know, has probably never sat on the bench in his basketball career, it's got to be a bit of a humbling experience and one that he's going to certainly learn from down the road. But actually good to see him get on the court. I would like to see him given a little bit more of an opportunity as this season goes along. If they're not going to play him at the NBA level, I think it's just better for him to stay at the G League level and get those reps, because sitting on the bench isn't really going to teach him much. And he's such a young, talented guy that I would hate to see him just kind of, not really get an opportunity to get any minutes.
I was all set to see him, for the most part, play with Maine now that he's back healthy again. And that seemed like an okay plan. Get some minutes, score some points, build your confidence, stay healthy, and then maybe get to sit on the bench when Boston is at home or in the area. I was surprised when I turned the game on last night to, A, see him on the bench at Dallas after just playing or just reporting back to Maine, and then, of course, even more surprised to see him get put in for a few moments in the first quarter and second quarter. So I think it's going to be real interesting to see what happens with him from here. Knock on wood, as long as he stays healthy, which has been an issue. Does he go back and forth between Boston and Maine, play a lot at Maine, play a little bit or none at Boston? What the plan's going to be, but it's going to be interesting to see now that he is back healthy.
For sure, and it's as somebody that follows the NBA pretty closely, when you just look at their roster and the guys that they have, it just seems like it's going to be pretty difficult for him to make a breakthrough when they're fully healthy, because, you know, they have Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart, all these guys who are making tens of millions of dollars. Those are the guys that are going to get the majority of the minutes. So I hope whatever comes from this is going to end up being a positive, because I think whether it be in Boston or whether it be with another franchise down the road where he finally does get his opportunity to play, you know, I think he's just too talented of a player, too good of an offensive player to not find his way somewhere in the league. And it's definitely kind of different seeing a basketball game where Romeo is not the center of attention after watching him for all those years at New Albany and what he was able to do at IU last year, even though, you know, he wasn't necessarily a dominant player. He was a guy that had the ball in his hands all the time, and just to see him kind of, you know, tucked away in the corner and not really being given the ball or much of a role on offense, it was different. So we'll see how it progresses, as you said, as the season goes along, and hopefully, regardless of his role, hopefully he's getting an opportunity to make an impact, whether it be at the G League level or at the NBA level.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall. He's with us on Thursdays as we talk IU basketball and more. Let's jump into Indiana's next game, Notre Dame at the Crossroads Classic at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Notre Dame 8-3 on the season. And I want to start with this, and I think it's kind of a yearly chat you and I have And I haven't heard much of it this year, and I don't know why that is or isn't. But normally there's a little pushback about this event and that, oh, Indiana needs to be playing in another event, or there's other opportunities they're missing by locking into this agreement to rotate around and play the other in-state schools that are part of this event. But as somebody that loves basketball in our state, not just Indiana, but watching all the local teams, lots of local players, obviously former high school players in our state that accomplished a lot in their prep careers at this event. This is, I think, a fun event, and it's a meaningful event, and it's an event that you track the success over the years of each team in the event, which I want to talk with you about here in just a second as well. But in your opinion, as someone that's on the IU beat all the time, that knows other opportunities out there and knows kind of what this event is, is this still to you a worthwhile and meaningful event for Indiana to participate in as far as where they're at as a program right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it's fine, and it's not something that I would be that I'm overly enthusiastic about. And I've said that kind of for a long time because, you know, going back to when it started, it was an event that really Indiana, it's kind of a can't-win situation. If they go and win their game, they're expected to, and if they go to lose their game, they're going to get criticized for it around the state. You know, they're supposed to be the blue blood program in the state, and really their record, 5-3, is nothing to kind of be ashamed of through this event. But I think it's an event that's really helped Butler more than anything else. It's in their backyard, obviously. It's good for Indiana fans to have a chance to go up to Indianapolis and watch a game. And in the years where there's a game at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, it's obviously good to get a game there, although it hasn't really translated into any success in the Big Ten tournament for Indiana. But, you know, it was interesting. This week on the podcast, we had a conversation just about Fred Glass and his legacy in terms of an athletic director at IU. I'm sure it's something you've talked about on the show this week, but, you know, I don't look at it from a 24-sport perspective. I look at it from a one-sport perspective because that's what my focus is on, is men's basketball. And one of the things we mentioned as something that maybe will be looked upon in the long term as negative on Fred Glass was this event. And the reason for that is because, you know, Indiana's missed out on the CBS Sports Classic as a result of this event. You know, it's been publicized that, you know, CBS wanted Indiana in that event with Kentucky, North Carolina, and UCLA. And because of this contractual obligation to stay in this, they weren't able to do it. And Ohio State has been able to go into that and benefit from it. So, you know, I don't mind the event, but I don't like it at the expense of taking Indiana out of opportunities that would kind of be more on the national stage. I think sometimes Indiana doesn't think big enough in terms of where it needs to play, what it needs to be in on a year-to-year basis. And this event is good. It's fun, as you mentioned. It's always a good day of basketball, but I would like to, in the long term, see it either move to a different weekend where Indiana can maybe get into something else with some other you know, top programs from around the country that can kind of get it in games maybe in different areas where you have a little bit more exposure for the program. Or, you know, it's in year 9 now. How long is this realistic going to keep going? Is it going to go for 15 years? I'm not sure on that. I think at some point one of the programs will want out or get out. So we'll see. I think it's signed here for a couple more years at least, and we'll see where the direction goes once there's a change in the administration. I'm sure if Archie Miller doesn't want to keep playing it long term, Indiana will get out of it. But it's like I said, it's a fine event. It's nothing that I get, you know, overly excited for. I think it's obviously a good opportunity to go play a quality team on a neutral court. But, you know, Indiana brings most of the fans. They sell a majority of the tickets. And then when they lose, it's something where they're going to get a lot of criticism for it. So I just don't, you know, going into the Saturday, you know, if Indiana wins, they're expected to win. They're expected to beat Notre Dame. And if they lose, it's going to be, well, what's wrong with Indiana? You know, they can't win in their own backyard against Notre Dame, who doesn't travel very well. So it's just, I just don't really see the huge benefit that Indiana gets out of it other than playing a game in Indianapolis.
If you told me that Indiana and Kentucky could play this weekend, this Saturday, kind of a prelude to the holidays and so forth, mm-hmm. as part of the CBS Sports Classic at a neutral site or wherever, I would be welcome to say bye-bye to the Crossroads Classic.
Yeah,
and I think
sure.
a lot
for
of
sure.
fans
I mean,
would, too.
Even if it was not Kentucky this year, but even if you're playing UCLA, North Carolina, Kentucky on a rotation, or if you're playing, you know, a team like Kansas, you know, somebody that's, you know, that's kind of at the spot where you aspire to be. I mean, Indiana doesn't aspire to be Butler or Notre Dame or Purdue. They aspire to be in the conversation with those schools that have been winning at the highest level. And I just, like I said, I don't necessarily view it as a negative. I just don't think in terms of recruiting, it really does anything to help Indiana.
Talking with Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall here on a Thursday edition of the program. Let's talk a little bit about the matchup for IU at the Crossroads Classic. Your thoughts on the Fighting Irish? They're 8-3. I don't think all is well right now with Notre Dame basketball at all. Not that they're obviously off to a terrible start, but there have been some thoughts out there that maybe things are slipping, and it's a program that's missed, like Indiana, some NCAA tournament appearances here recently.
Yeah, I mean, they had those two really good years where they went to the Elite Eight back-to-back, and they had that team that really pushed Kentucky, the Kentucky team that was unbeaten going into the Final Four and lost eventually to Wisconsin. You know, they took Kentucky to the wire that year. I think they lost to them by two in the Elite Eight, and then followed that up with another Elite Eight appearance. It looked like they were in kind of on an upward trajectory, and, you know, they've had injuries. They've had some guys that they recruited. They recruited a kid from DeMatha, I think, DJ Harvey, who didn't really work out. He was, I think, at the time the highest-rated recruit. He ended up transferring to Vanderbilt. They've had, just some, I think, roster management issues. It always seems like every year they don't have enough players. It seems like they're playing like seven or eight guys. And over the course of a season, I think that wears guys down. In the last couple of years, and they've coupled with, you know, injuries and lack of depth, I think it catches up to you. They've missed the tournament the last 2 years. I don't think the expectation is that they'll get there this year, just looking at their schedule. And really, they have a good record at 8-3, but you look at their non-conference schedule and they haven't really accomplished anything of note. I mean, the games that they've lost, they lost obviously two conference games so far, so they're 0-2 in the league. They lost to North Carolina to open the year. They lost at home to Boston College, and then they went in the Big Ten ACC Challenge to Maryland and just got run off the court. So while they are a team that can make things happen offensively, they shoot a lot of threes, which I'm sure we'll get into as, you know, talk a little bit more about the matchup. It seems like it's almost time for Notre Dame to be at a crossroads. Bray has been there for a long time. They have a lot of seniors this year. And you look at their recruiting, they have a kid sitting out by the name of Cormac Ryan who played at Stanford. He's a really good shooter. I think he'll help them next year. But you look at the recruiting, they've got two guys coming in that are ranked sub 200. You know, three or four of their best players are going to be gone after this year. And I just wonder if they miss the tournament this year, like what's going to happen next. I mean, they were one of the worst teams in the ACC last year. It looks like they're kind of going to be on that same trajectory this year. So they really, I mean, this is an important game for them. As important it is for Indiana, I mean, if Notre Dame doesn't win this game, they really did nothing in their non-conference.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall. Let's talk about how Indiana matches up with the Fighting Irish and what you could see as a result on Saturday, because Indiana, I think it's well documented, well spoken, that Indiana needs to finish out this month and very well could finish out this month with two victories to head into Big Ten play after January.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, I mean, their bread and butter is making threes. If they're making threes, they can play with a lot of teams. They can beat a lot of teams. They made 15 their last game at home against UCLA. UCLA is not any good this year, but it's still a name program that's going to at least resonate a little bit with the fan base. You beat Notre Dame, you beat UCLA at home, and that's, I guess, a good win. But, you know, they made a lot of threes. They're taking a lot of threes, I think almost 30 a game. They're making 11. The thing I think you worry about from an IU perspective, we've seen the Pac-9 defense be very susceptible to three-point shooting outbursts. We saw it the first year with Archie Miller, the very first game. Indiana State came in and was making a bunch of threes. We saw it later that year with Fort Wayne making a bunch of threes. There's been other opponents over the course of time with this Pac-9 defense where Indiana kind of gets caught in overhelp, and I don't think against Notre Dame you can afford to do that. They've got enough guys. They space the floor well enough. They got a big guy that makes threes. So, you know, Indiana can't afford to let Notre Dame make 13, 14, 15 threes and expect to win the game. I just don't think that's going to happen. You know, if Notre Dame has a really good shooting day and is making a ton of threes, I think it's bad news for Indiana. The other thing I will say is the free throw line is really important in this game. You know, Notre Dame is second in the country in opponent free throw rate, and for for those who kind of don't maybe look at the analytics as closely as I do, it's basically measuring how frequently you're getting to the line compared to your field goal attempts. So the idea is the more times you get fouled, the better chance you have to score, because a free throw is a higher percentage shot than a field goal attempt. So Notre Dame doesn't foul at all, and Indiana is number one in the country in terms of getting to the line. So something's going to have to give there. Either Notre Dame's going to continue their trend of keeping teams off the line, or Indiana's going to kind of have a breakthrough there against that defense and be able to get to the line. And I think Indiana's just got to pound the ball inside in this game. Notre Dame, as I said, they don't like to foul. They don't have a lot of depth. So just go right at them, see what happens. I mean, either make them, contest your shot and foul you, or score easily at the rim. I don't think Indiana wants to get into a three-point shooting contest with Notre Dame, because they'll lose if that happens.
Alex, surprised to look at the overall records of the Crossroads Classic, and I don't know why this surprises me. Not much has changed since last year, obviously, but Indiana and Butler both 5-3 in the event. They've got the best records. Notre Dame 4-4. Purdue just 2-6 in this event. It has not been a good event for the Boilermakers.
Yeah, and they were, I think, at one point 0-5. I think they've won two of their last three. I know they lost. I think they lost last year to Notre Dame, if I recall correctly. So they lost 5-1-2 and then lost again. So, I mean, I guess what that goes to show you is that it's not really these games aren't really indicative of what's to come the rest of the season, right? And Purdue's been the worst team in this event, over the last 8 years. But, you know, the past couple of years out of these four programs, they've been the best program. So it doesn't really tell you a whole lot about what to expect the rest of the year. Butler, I think, is off to a really good start. I think that, you know, in terms of matchups, I think these are two intriguing matchups from the standpoint of, you know, Purdue's gone through its share of struggles. I think it's a game they really need to get. Butler is ranked, and they've got some good wins, but they don't really have that elite, like, top 15, top 20 net team win, and they could get that, I think, if they can beat Purdue. And then obviously the Indiana Notre Dame stuff we've talked about in terms of just the contrast in styles and kind of where the two teams differ. So I think it should be a fun afternoon of basketball. I'm glad that, you know, starting a little bit earlier in the day, getting the noon start for Indiana is a good thing. Give people a chance the last weekend before Christmas maybe to enjoy the game and then finish up whatever, family or shopping obligations they have and then head on into the holiday. I mean, this is kind of a weird time in the schedule where you have these long breaks before games. It feels like Indiana hasn't played now for quite a while, and it is, I think, 8 days between games for these next two. So hopefully everybody's healthy and able to go. Be interested to see kind of what the status of Devontae Green is going in to Saturday. We haven't heard much, but we should hear something tomorrow afternoon on that from Archie Miller when he meets with the media.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Alex Bozich, always with us on Thursdays. Alex is editor of InsideTheHall.com, a great resource on IU basketball. And as always, Alex, Merry Christmas, and thanks for the great insight on IU hoops as well.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt.
All right. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, Chris May, the executive director of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, on the upcoming Hall of Fame Classic, which Silver Creek will be a participant in, and more after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, presented by CC Power Sports.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We're back, and Chris May, the executive director of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, with us as we close out this Thursday program. And Mr. May, once again, the Hall of Fame Classic, boys and girls, always a great showcase of high school basketball in our state after the Christmas holiday. Some local representatives from here in southern Indiana will participate in that event. Of course, headlining our local participants would be Silver Creek on the boys' side.
Yeah, good morning. Happy holidays, Matt. Good to be with you. It's that time of the year. Not only is it the week of heading into Christmas, but we're getting into our Raymond James Hall of Fame Classic. Silver Creek boys, Salem girls will be up here next Saturday and Friday, respectively, and we're excited about those teams and the overall lineups.
Saturday, December 28th, that's the boys' event. And when you think about some of the top players in the state and some of the teams and different classes that are already having great years and expected to maybe be state championship contenders, you've got some of those on display at the Hall of Fame Classic. Silver Creek opens up against a very good Heritage Hills team. I think that game obviously could have the feel of a regional game, which is what it could be in March when we get to that point. And then, of course, Lawrence Central, who is a really good team this year and plays at a high speed. They will take on Lafayette Jeff in that second semifinal on the 28th. Some really good teams, some really good players, and I know some teams that we think might have a chance from that group to make noise in the state tournament as well.
Yeah, that's always the goal for this event, is to have four of the best from around the state. And the matchups that you mentioned, I think there are a couple different storylines there. The opener, the Silver Creek Heritage Hills game, you hit on it. Those are two of the top contenders, it looks like, from 3A South. And both those coaching staffs and teams have acknowledged that that's a potential, they hope, regional matchup. Obviously, as your listeners know, and everybody in your part of the state knows, you know, Trey Kaufman and what kind of level he plays at, but also Cooper Jacoby, you know, especially I saw him at Southport last Saturday, really opened a few more eyes. And so I know with that 3A championship from last year, they've got a bit of a target on their back. And so that matchup looks pretty fun. And then the second matchup, the Lawrence Central Lafayette Jeff matchup, LC opened the season, preseason number one, and for the first couple of weeks of the season here. You know, they've got two seniors. Dre Davis is committed to Louisville, and their point guard, Nigel Pack, is a senior committed to Kansas State. They've got a sophomore, Dre Davis's younger brother, that'll be a high-major college player. So they've got athletes. And then Lafayette Jeff is a team that can put up points in bunches. They've already had games of 99, 98 points already this season, and they really love to shoot three. And when they're hitting, that makes a pretty exciting game as well. So a lot of potential with star players, really good teams, and we're excited about the games next Saturday, the 28th.
Chris, you get an opportunity to get out around the state visiting with coaches and watching teams that either are participating or maybe are candidates to participate in future Hall of Fame Classic events at the Hall of Fame in Newcastle. Where do you see Silver Creek as you've journeyed across the state so far this season? Where do you see their ranking, and are they truly one of the top teams, maybe even regardless of class, in the state?
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say, is I'm not even talking specifically to 3A now, but with the success they've had, with the talent they have right now, and then, of course, I think as Northern develops as their point guard and gets more experience this season, being the big man in the backcourt, so to speak, I think that you're looking at a really, really strong team. They had an interesting performance Saturday at that Southport, as I referenced. They dug an early hole. They were down 13-2 to Fort Wayne Blackhawk from the get-go, just in the opening minutes, but came back, played really well. Not only did Cooper Jacoby play well, but Trey got 17 points. Northern did his thing. I do think that it's of interest to me because of the seniors they had in their backcourt last year, that I thought maybe they'd take a bit of a step back as far as guard play is concerned. But when you've got, you know, 6'7", 6'8", inside, and those two guys as good as they are, I think that makes them a tough matchup and a formidable foe. And, yeah, not just 3A. I think Silver Creek, when you throw the whole state into one bowl, so to speak, Silver Creek is still among the very best.
Chris May, he's the director of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, talking about the upcoming Hall of Fame Classic on the boys' side, Saturday, December 28th at the Newcastle Fieldhouse. And I've got to brag on the area here for just a second. I know we've had some girls' teams participate recently as well, but from Clark and Floyd counties, New Albany, Floyd Central, now Silver Creek, you can fill me in here if I'm missing anyone, but we've had quite a run at great teams representing our area that have been invited to participate in the Hall of Fame Classic.
Yeah, you're right. On the boys' side, those three programs you named in the last 4 years, New Albany, then Floyd Central, and now Silver Creek, have been in our boys' tournament. And on the girls' side, we had the Jeffersonville girls here last year. So yeah, I think hopefully that for that region, that is a source of pride that the best teams from your area have been coming up here and playing pretty well up here, honestly. And we look all over the state, and for us to consistently find really good teams down there, I think speaks to the level of play.
Chris May of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame with us. Chris, I want to make a pitch here. I don't care if it's a Silver Creek fan listening today or someone thinking about the upcoming Christmas holiday, some time out of school, and maybe want to see some basketball or make a little road trip. I know the holidays can be busy, but the Hall of Fame is an awesome experience. It's something that anyone that has any love of basketball in our state should be very proud of, and you get the opportunity to head it up. What a neat display it is. What a great collection of memorabilia and history throughout the years, the great years of basketball in our state. And for a Silver Creek fan making it, or for anyone looking for a little Christmas or post-Christmas getaway, you go up, you see the Hall of Fame Classic, maybe the boys and the girls, maybe one or the other, but you got to make time to stop at the Hall of Fame Museum and see the great collection of things that you guys have put forth for fans and visitors.
Yeah, that's a big part of the experience. Those will be the two busiest days of the year as far as visitors in the museum. And, you know, we've got that gap. We've got a day session, and then we come back for an evening session. We've got a few hours in there. You get something to eat. You come to the museum, and it makes for a great experience. And, you know, whether it's folks who are on the Silver Creek bandwagon or fan club or just casual basketball fans, like we said, there's a chance if you're a Louisville fan to come see a U of L recruit from Dre Davis from Lawrence Central. You're going to see other great players that you're going to see on ESPN in the coming years at major college programs. And so, yeah, it's not just the games, the museum, the overall experience, the world's largest and finest high school field house, as Newcastle bills it, a great facility. If they'd not been here to see games in that gym and that field house also adds to the atmosphere and the ambiance.
Yeah, great trip for someone to make. Chris May, Executive Director of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. Chris, a lot of other things I want to chat with you about. You've had some Hall of Fame classes announced recently, also some silver anniversary winners that involve former players here in our area that I want to highlight. So we'll have you back very soon to discuss some of those things as well. Thanks for the chat today.
No problem. If anybody's interested in coming up, see Silver Creek. John Dablow will be glad to sell you some tickets.
Absolutely.
Next week.
Coach Dablow at Silver Creek High School, and tickets available for the Hall of Fame Classic. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap things up for this Thursday program. Back with you Friday at 11 o'clock. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.